Les fleurs. April 17th. Flowers sent out in the early a.m. May 1st. Today, and I thought it would never happen again, I have met someone about whom I think I can be hopeful. Her name is Daisy. She works in a florist shop. The florist shop, I might add, where I paid a visit to gather some sorrowful flowers for Claire, who to the rest of the world is still a missing person. At first, of course, Daisy was politely reserved when I asked about some lilting blossoms for a loved one's memorial. I soon cured her, however, of this detached manner. In my deeply shy and friendly tone of voice, I asked about some of the other flowers in the shop, ones having no overtones of loss. She was quite glad to take me on a tour of the shop's iridescent inventory. I confessed to knowing next to nothing about commercial plants and things, and remarked on her enthusiasm for her work, hoping all the while that at least part of her animation was inspired by me. "Oh, I love working with flowers," she said. "I think they're real interesting." Then she asked if I was aware that there were plants having flowers which opened only at night, and that certain types of violets bloomed only in darkness underground. My inner flow of thoughts and sensations suddenly quickened. Though I had already sensed she was a girl of special imagination, this was the first hint I received of just how special it was. I judged my efforts to know her better would not be wasted as they have been with others. "That is real interesting about those flowers," I said, smiling a hothouse warm smile. There was a pause, which I filled in with my name. She then told me hers. "Now what kind of flowers would you like?" she asked. I staidly requested an arrangement suitable for the grave of a departed grandmother. Before leaving the shop, I told Daisy I might need to stop by again to satisfy some future floral needs. She seemed to have no objection to this. With the vegetation nestled in my arm, I songfully walked out of the store. I then proceeded directly to Chapel Gardens Cemetery. For a while, I sincerely made an effort to find a headstone that might, by coincidence, display my lost one's name, and any dates would just have to do. I thought she deserved this much at least. As events transpired, however, the recipient of my commemorative bouquet had to be someone named Clarence. May 16th. Day, as I now intimately called her, visited my apartment for the first time and fell in love with its quaint refurbishments. "I adore well-preserved old places," she said. It seemed to me she really did. I thought she would. She remarked what decorative wonders a few plants would do for my ancient rooms. She was obviously sensitive to the absence of natural adornments in my bachelor quarters. "Night-blooming cirruses?" I asked, trying not to mean too much by this and give myself away. A mild grin appeared on her face, but it was not an issue I thought I could press at the time. Even now, I press it within these scrapbook pages with great delicacy. Day wandered about the apartment for a while. I watched her as I would some exotic animal, a sleek ocelot, perhaps. Then suddenly I realized I had regrettably overlooked something. She looked it over. The object was positioned on a low table before a high window and between its voluminous curtains. It seemed so vulgarly prominent to me then, especially since I hadn't intended to let her see anything of this sort so early in our relationship. "What is this?" she asked, her voice expressing a kind of outraged curiosity bordering on plain outrage. "It's just a sculpture. I told you I do things like that. It's not very good. Kind of dumb." She examined the piece more closely. "Watch that," I warned. She let out a little owl. "Is it supposed to be some type of cactus?" she inquired. For a moment, she seemed to take a genuine interest in that obscure objet d'art. "It has tiny teeth," she observed, "on these big tongue things." "They do look like tongues. I'd never thought of that." Rather ingenious comparison, considering. I hoped her imagination had found fertile ground in which to grow, but instead she revealed a moribund disgust. "You might have better luck passing it off as an animal than a plant, or a sculpture of a plant, or whatever. It's got a velvety kind of fur and looks like it might crawl away." I felt like crawling away myself at that point. I asked her, as a quasi-botanist, if there were not plants resembling birds and other animal life. This was my feeble attempt to exculpate my creation from any charges of unnaturalness. "It's strange how you're sometimes forced to assume an unsympathetic view of yourself through borrowed eyes." Finally, I mixed some drinks, and we went on to other things. I put on some music. Soon afterward, though, the bland harmony of the music was undermined by an unfortunate dissonance. That detective, Briceberg, I think, arrived for an encore of his interrogation regarding the Clare affair. Fortunately, I was able to keep him and his questions out in the hallway the entire time. We reviewed the previous dialogue we'd had. I reiterated to him that Clare was just someone I worked with and with whom I was professionally friendly. It appears that some of my co-workers, unidentified, suspected that Clare and I were romantically involved. "Office gossip," I countered, knowing she was one girl who knew how to keep certain secrets, even if she could not be trusted with others. "Sorry," I said. "I had no idea where she could have disappeared to." I did manage to subversively hint, however, that I would not be surprised if in a sudden flight of neurotic despair she had impulsively relocated to some land of her heart's desire. I myself had despaired to find that within Claire's dark and promisingly moody borders lay a disappointing dreamland of white picket fences and flower-printed curtains. No, I didn't tell that to the detective. Besides, I further contended, it was well known in the office that Claire had begun dating someone approximately 7 to 10 days, my personal estimation of the term of her disloyalty, before her disappearance. So why bother me? This, I found out, was the reason. He had also been informed, he told me, of my belonging to a certain offbeat organization. I replied there was nothing offbeat in serious philosophical study. Furthermore, I was an artist, as he well knew, and as anybody knows. Artistic personalities have a perfectly natural tendency toward such things. I thought he would understand if I put it that way. He did. The man appeared satisfied with my every statement. Indeed, he seemed overly eager to dismiss me as a person of interest in the case, no doubt trying to create a false sense of security on my part and lead me to make an unwitting admission to the foulest kind of play. "Was that about the girl where you work who disappeared?" Daisy asked me afterward. "Mm-hmm," I noised. I was brooding and silent for a while, hoping she would attribute this to my inward lament for that strange girl at the office and not to the lamentably imperfect evening we'd had. "Maybe I'd better go," she said, and then did. There was not much of our date left to salvage anyway. After she abandoned me, I got very drunk on a liqueur, tasting of flowers from open fields, or so it seemed. I also took this opportunity to reread a story about some men who visit the white waste regions of a polar wonderland. I don't expect to dream tonight, having already sated myself with this Arctic fantasy. Brotherhood of Paradise, offbeat indeed. September 21st, Day came up to the cool, clean offices of G.R. Glacey, the advertising firm for which I worked, to meet me for lunch. I showed her my cubicle of commercial artistry and drew her attention to my latest project. "Oh, that's lovely," she said, when I pointed out the drawing of a nymph with flowers in her freshly shampooed hair. "That's really nice." That "nice" remark almost spoiled my day. I asked her to look closely at the flowers mingling in the locks of the mythical being. It was barely noticeable that one of the flower stems was growing out of, or perhaps into, the creature's head. Day didn't seem to appreciate the craftiness of my craft very much, and I thought we were making such progress along offbeat paths. Damn that Briceberg. Perhaps I should wait until we return from our trip before showing her any of the paintings I have hidden at my home. I want her to be prepared. Everything is all prepared for our vacation, at least. Day finally found someone to take care of her cat. October 10th. Goodbye, diary. See you when I get back. November 1st. After a period of ruminative silence on the subject, I will now set down a brief chapter from Day's and my tropical sojourn. I'm not sure whether the events to be delineated represent an impasse or a turning point in the course of our relationship. Perhaps there is some point that I have completely failed to get. As yet, I am still in the dark. I've been here before with Claire and had hoped that my escapist interlude with Day would be definitive, or close to it and not filled with dubiety. Nevertheless, I still feel that the episode to follow deserves documentation. A Hawaiian paradise at midnight. Actually, we were just gazing upon the beachside luxuriance from our hotel veranda. Day was tipsy from consuming several drinks that wore flowers on their foamy heads. I was in a condition similar to hers. A few moments of heady silence passed, punctuated by an occasional sigh from Day. We heard the flapping of invisible wings whipping the warm air and darkness. We listened closely to the sounds of black orchids growing, even if there were none. "Hmm," hummed Day. We were ripe for a whim. I had one, not knowing yet if I could pull it off. "Can you smell the mysterious Sirius?" I said, placing one hand on her far shoulder and dramatically passing the other in a horizontal arc before the jungle beyond. "Can you?" I hypnotically repeated. "I can," said a game Day. "But can we find them, Day, and watch them open in the moonlight?" We can," she chanted giddily. "We could." Suddenly, the smooth-skinned leaves of the night garden were brushing against our smooth-skinned selves. Day paused to touch a flower that was orange or red but smelled of a deep violet. I encouraged her to press on across the flower-bedded earth. We plunged deeper into the dream garden. Faster, faster, faster the sounds and smells rushed by us. It was easier than I thought. At some point, with almost no effort at all, I successfully managed our full departure from known geography. "Day! Day!" I shouted. "We're here! I've never shown this to anyone, and what torture it's been keeping it from you. No, don't speak. Look. Look." Oh, the thrill of bringing a romantic companion to this dark paradise. How I yearned to show her this resplendent world in full bloom and have her behold it with ensorcelled delight. She was somewhere near me in the darkness. I waited, seeing her a thousand ways in my mind before actually gazing at the real Day. I looked. "What's wrong with the stars?" The sky, was all she said. She was trembling. At breakfast the next morning, I subtly probed her for impressions and judgments of the night before, but she was badly hungover and had only a chaotic recall of what she had experienced. Well, at least she didn't go into hysterics, as did my old flame Claire. Since our return, I have been working on a painting entitled Sanctum Obscurum. Though I have done this kind of work many times before, I am including in this one elements that I hope will stir Day's memory and precipitate a conscious recollection of not only a certain night in the islands, but of all the subtle and not so subtle messages I have tried to communicate to her. I only pray she will understand. November 14th. Stars of disaster. Earthly, not unearthly, asters are what Day's heart craves. She is too much a lover of natural flora to be anything else. I know this now. I showed her the painting and even imagined she was excited about seeing it. But I think she was just waiting to see what kind of fool I would make of myself. She sat on the sofa, scraping her lower lip with a nervous forefinger. Opposite her, I let a velvet cloth drop. She looked up, as if there had been a startling noise. I was not wholly satisfied with the painting myself, but this exhibition was designed to serve an extra aesthetic purpose. I searched her eyes for a reflection of understanding, a ripple of empathetic insight. Well? I asked, the necessity of the word tolling doom. Her gaze told me all I needed to know, and the fatal clarity of the message was reminiscent of another girl I once knew. She gave me a second chance, looking at the picture with a theatrical scrutiny. The picture itself? An interior done up very much like my own apartment. A refuge crowding about a window of a disproportionate breadth, so as to direct the viewer's sight telescopically outward. Beyond the window is a vista wholly alien to terrestrial nature and perhaps to all that we deem human. Outside is a gorgeous kingdom of glittering colors and velvety jungle shapes, a realm of contorted rainbows and twisted auroras. Hyper-radiant hues are calmed by the glass so that their strange intensity does not threaten the chromatic integrity of the world within. Some stars, colored from the most spectral part of the spectrum, blossom in the high darkness. The outer world glistens in stellar light and is mirrored by gleams from within each labyrinthine form. And upon the window's surface is the watery reflection of a lone figure gazing out at this otherworldly paradise. Of course it's very good, she observed. Very realistic. Not at all, Daisy Day. Not realistic in either manner or matter. Some uncomfortable moments later, Day told me she had a prior engagement and was running late. It seemed she had made girl plans with a girlfriend of hers to do some girly things girls do when they get together with others of their kind. I said I understood, and I did. There is no doubt in my mind of the gender of Day's companion this night. And perhaps other nights I did not know about. But it was for a different reason that I was distressed to see her go. Something that I could read in her every move and expression, something I have seen before, gave away her suspicions about me and my private life. Of course, she already knew about the meetings I attend and all such things. I've even paraphrased and abridged for her the discussion which goes on at these gatherings, always obscuring their real meaning in progressively more transparent guises, hoping one day to show her the naked truth. Like Claire, however, Day has prematurely learned too much of the truth about me and the others, and I fear she may decide to relay her inside information to the wrong people. The dogged Detective Briceberg, for instance. November 16th. Tonight we held an emergency meeting, our assembly in crisis. The others feel there's a problem, and of course I know they're right. Ever since I met my latest love, I could sense their growing uneasiness, which was their prerogative. Now, however, all has changed. My romantic misjudgment has seen to that. They expressed absolute horror that an outsider should know so much. I feel it myself. Day is a stranger now, and I wonder what her loquacious self might disclose about her former friend, not to mention his present ones. A marvelous arcana is threatened with exposure. The inconspicuousness we need for our lives could be lost, and with it would go the keys to a strange kingdom. We've confronted these situations before. I'm not the only one to have jeopardized our secrecy. We, of course, have no secrets from each other. They know everything about me, and I about them. They knew every step of the way the progress of my relationship with Daisy. Some of them even predicted the outcome. And though I thought I was right in taking the chance that they were wrong, I must now defer to their prophecy. Those lonely souls, mes frères. Do you want us to see it through? They asked in so many words. I consented, finally, in a score of ambiguous, half-hesitant ways. Then they sent me back to my unflowered sanctum. I'll never again get involved in another situation of this kind. I promised myself, even though I've made this resolution before. I stared at the razory dentees of my furry sculpture for a perilously long while. What that poor girl saw as tongue-like floral appendages were silent. The preservation of such silence, of course, is their whole purpose. I remember that Daisy once jokingly asked me on what I modeled my art. November 17th. To Eden with me, you will not leave, to live in a cottage of crazy crooked eaves. In your own happy home, you take care these nights. When you let your little cat in, please turn on the lights. Something scurries behind and finds a cozy place to stare. Something sent to you from paradise. With serpents to spare, tongues flowering. They leap out, laughing, lapping, disappear. I do this to pass the hours, only to pass the hours. November 17th, 12 a.m. Flowers.